Hi, I'm Haley Sue Robinson with the City of Pueblo. Come take a ride with Zero Fare for Better Air, where bus fares are free for June, July, and August on all Pueblo Transit and City Lift rides. Riding Pueblo Transit is easy and convenient with 12 routes throughout the city. All bus schedules are kept up to date on the city's website at www.pueblo.us. Visit Pueblo Transit online or come take a ride for yourself, starting at the Transit Center, located at 123 Court Street.
Hello and welcome to the Voices of Pueblo podcast brought to you by the Pueblo Star Journal. I'm Ben Kaysen here with two very special guests today, Deborah Espinoza and Juan Espinoza. Guys, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you and good morning. We're happy to be here.
Oh, man.
Glad to do it.
I am so excited today. We've got a lot to talk about. And first off, I just kind of want to start off with, how long have you guys been connected to Pueblo?
Oh, we moved here about...
75.
Yeah.
In 1975.
Uh-huh.
So we raised our kids here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And we chose to move here because we were on a mission, and that was journalism.
Okay.
You know, so, but I spent a lot of time here as a growing up. I had relatives here, aunties, grandparents, you know, extended family that lived on the east side.
Mm. What was so special about it that brought you guys here?
Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo.
We came here to celebrate the Cinco de Mayo, and it was such a blast that, you know, there was live Mexican music and probably a half a dozen nightclubs in town at the time.
Yeah.
And the festivities themselves was a parade down Main Street. That's what brought me. I'd been to Pueblo one time before.
Yeah.
And that was when Kennedy came to sign the Fried Prime Pan Arkansas project, and so that's why I came, was because of the atmosphere of the Cinco de Mayo.
And when he says Cinco de Mayo, I know what he means. It's that I always like to come here. I grew up in Grand Junction. I went to Grand Junction High School, etc., and really experienced the Western Slope. I love it. It's beautiful. But I loved Pueblo because it was, you know, ethnic, and I saw people that looked like me. There were people, brown people, that worked in the banks and in the stores and owned restaurants. I had not seen that before.
Yeah.
And so I've always felt at home here. So that means I've met kids that look like me and made friends, and I had all my cousins, and so I had another life here. And so I introduced Juan to the state fair, and you know, our mission was to start a newspaper, La Cucaracha, which people can relate to from the 70s and the, you know, the changes resulting from the civil rights movement, etc. There was a need for that at the time, an alternative paper. But yes, then we got into our careers as well, and so I worked at the El Pueblo History Museum for a long time.
Yeah. And then, Juan, you worked at the Pueblo Chieftain for a while as well.
I spent about 22 years there.
Yeah, see, that's amazing. But La Cucaracha was the reason that you kind of mentioned journalism. Tell me about La Cucaracha. What was the original idea? Why did you have that passion for it, like you said?
Well, when we were students at the university in Boulder, we started a newspaper called El Diario de la Gente, the Diary of the People. Mm-hmm. And we did it more like a workshop. The people that were involved in that were all journalism students, and we were all looking at, you know, we were preparing ourselves for journalistic careers. Mm-hmm. And you know what? The media did not treat Chicanos very well in the 70s. I think we were misrepresented, and we still are in a number of cases. Mm-hmm. And we were gangsters, we were criminals, we were, you know, we were always the bad guys in the television stories, and the news was not all good, and the way the civil rights movement was covered was also very biased, and we really felt that we needed our own voice. We needed to speak for ourselves rather than let somebody interpret for us what they think we mean. Mm-hmm. And so that was the essence of why we were starting our own paper. We came to Pueblo because we felt that there was a large enough economic base to support a Chicano newspaper.
Wow.
And
right. I mentioned the restaurants and the businesses.
Yeah.
So there was places, people that would buy advertising, and that was had to be a very important consideration. So that's why we came to Pueblo.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So
all of those reasons.
What were those early days of setting it up like?
Poverty. Mm-hmm. We basically took a vow of poverty because we were living in poverty. We paid everybody but ourselves first. And there was not much income, and we did get some. So we wrote some grants and got some small grants. And I always had an outside job. I worked for Pueblo Manpower. I was a Veterans Employment Counselor when the Cucaracha actually started publishing. Before that, I worked with Co-op, which was a War on Poverty community organization. I was teaching ceramics and painting.
Wow. That's awesome.
So I did anything and everything to support my family while I was trying to start this newspaper. Mm-hmm. I ended up at Pueblo County. I was a third employee of the Pueblo County Housing and Human Services Department. Mm-hmm. Patsy Oshado started that department. Mm-hmm. And like I say, I was the third employee that she hired, and that's what I did up until the time I went to the Chieftain.
Wow. So how long has the Cucaracha been running?
Well, we started in 76, and we folded at the end of 83. So,
okay.
And then after I retired from the Chieftain in 2009, I started doing special editions for events. We do a Cucaracha for the Cinco de Mayo, and other special
anniversaries,
just periodically, we just
landmark time.
Wow.
Yeah,
put it out there. But it was no attempt to resurrect the paper. Just recently, we thought, we're involved with another organization that's called El Movimiento Sigue, which is really a continuation of the Chicano movement. People that are involved in that are still working on some of the original goals that we had back in the 70s.
Wow.
And even earlier. And so that organization is a nonprofit, received a grant to address the issue of criminal justice. Restorative justice in the courts. And so we resurrected the Cucaracha to be a vehicle to communicate with the community about that particular grant.
Mm.
And that's how it got resurrected. Mm-hmm. We didn't expect the Chieftain to pull out the rug on the printing, so now we're going to create an online presence that will try to do some of the same stuff.
But we still want to cover the social justice issues, and then we dedicate some pages strictly to restorative justice. So the grants that he mentioned are sizable. So we work hard. to meet the mission of those grants.
Mm. So why does restorative justice and social justice pull on you guys' heartstrings?
It goes back to our, days at CU. That's what El Diario de la Gente covered. There were issues on campus that were being fought for, education, getting more kids on campus. Then there was all the outreach that was going around us. So there were a lot of protests in Brighton, Fort Lupton on labor issues, farm worker issues, education issues, police brutality. And so none of that has changed, and in fact it's even more controversial and creates a division. So we're representing the side that we work for justice.
Mm. That's awesome. That's so cool. I love that.
I'll give you an example. In the last issue of the Cucaracha, which is the August edition of this year, I wrote an article. It's actually a research compilation of several articles that I found that the headline is that 29,000 innocent people have served 29,000 years in our prisons since 1989.
Hmm.
And what it is there's an organization that tracks exonerations, people that are proven to be innocent because of new DNA tests and new evidence or suppressed evidence or evidence of misconduct on the part of the investigators or the police involved. Yeah. And all of these exonerations, there's over 3,000 people, like 3,400 people that have been exonerated. Mm-hmm. And collectively, that 3,400 people served 29,000 years in prison. And that statistic just blows my mind away, even now as I say it.
Yeah.
And to me, that's just why there is a need to do this kind of reformative justice work.
Mm. So. You know, recently, the local law enforcement, enforcement,
yeah.
They collaborated on a forgiveness day for people with low-level misdemeanor charges.
Yeah.
But a lot of people have warrants, so they don't want to go to jail.
Mm.
They're willing to pay the fines. So they showed up. 370 people showed up when they did a forgiveness day.
Mm.
And there were lawyers there that they could meet with.
Mm.
A lot of assistance without going into a lot of detail. Wow. But it was a demonstration of how these warrants clog up the court system.
Mm.
And people don't want to spend an automatic 3 days in jail now.
Yeah.
For a smaller crime.
Yeah.
And or jail at all, because they have jobs, the kids have to go to school, they have a life.
Sure.
And so their life becomes very complicated, stressful, causes a lot of stress on the
just
family.
Just looms over.
Entire family,
yeah.
Yes, it's incredible.
Mm.
So that is a good thing, and that is the kind of restorative justice that doesn't rely on such punitive measures that can be worked out.
Mm.
And our mission is to lower the incarceration rates.
Mm.
Our mission is to reduce the incarceration rates of Pueblo County.
Mm. Yeah, talk to me about that in connection with Pueblo. Why is Pueblo a place of need for this specifically?
We're not a wealthy town.
Mm.
And the economy here has struggled, and there's not a lot of job creation that we can compete with the larger cities. And this has always been a culturally different town.
Mm.
People have to remember that this was Mexico.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of Mexican descendants here.
Yeah.
That were here before this was the United States, before the Louisiana Purchase. So our history and our ties to the land is why we call ourselves Chicanos. We are that group, because our history is very complex, very diverse, and continues to be.
I want to tell you something. You know, in 2019 or 20, I can't remember which, but it was the Denver Post did a study of police-related homicides. And Colorado was like fifth in the nation per capita for the number of people that had been killed by law enforcement. And Pueblo County was the highest in Colorado. And so even though we have a relatively small population, we have a high percentage of the police-involved shootings. They happen all the time.
But, the point I was going with was that there is a history of systemic injustice.
Mm-hmm.
When we can document the redlining, the arrests, lack of opportunities for business loans, and without those resources, there's no innovation. We're failed in the schools. So our problems are really Pueblo's problems, and that's what we're trying to say. And I've tried to say that to City Council on a number of issues, and when we have contact, is that you know, don't shoot yourself in the foot when you talk about the economy and growth and attracting new business. You have to take care of the residents and the citizens first, take care of the housing, and now we have the homelessness and the mental health issues. So it's very complicated. Some of that spills, it's really a national issue.
Yeah.
But in Pueblo, we are a microcosm of the bigger problems.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I want to tell you a quick incident about something that I think makes the point. When I was at the Chieftain, I was in the newsroom. We always had a scanner going, and we all heard it. It was funny because we laughed when they said it. But the dispatcher was talking about two suspects that were, I don't even know what the crime was, but she said they were extremely Hispanic. And what she meant to say was they're extremely intoxicated. But in her mind, she did a Freudian slip, and she said that she equated being Hispanic with being intoxicated.
Wow.
And I wrote a column about that at the time. But it's just an example, is that,
yeah.
You know, I covered the police in this town for over 10 years, and it changed. The law enforcement changed dramatically in that 10-year period, and not necessarily because of our reporting, but because times just change. But, you know, the things that were happening when I first went to the Chieftain, they were putting up sobriety checkpoints on the east side of town, on the back road. I don't know if you know that back road in Portland that connects Portland with Bessemer.
Yeah.
They were putting a sobriety checkpoint there.
Wow.
And, you know, 99% of the people that use that road are Hispanic. And I asked the sergeant, I said, why are you doing that? Why are you targeting this group? He says, Juan, he says, when you go hunting for rabbits, you go where the rabbits are. Anyway, it's just...
How can, if someone's listening to this and they are stirred up, how can they help and find out more?
You know what? There's a couple of places I would refer them to, is that all the critical incidents where somebody died at the hands of law enforcement, those are in a our local district attorney's website. And you can read the incident reports. He puts out a letter whenever there's a officer involved... killing, and explains the evidence. Some of them are like as long as 200 pages.
Wow.
And they don't have video, but they have stills that they take from the video.
Yeah.
And they're very informative. And you can learn a lot by reading those. And I think there's probably about 130 of those letters in his file now. I think it became state law somewhere 10, 15 years ago that they had to do that.
Yeah.
But that's a good place to start because it tells you how they operate, why they operate, what the... anyway, that's a good place to go. Online, the police department puts out a daily activity report. And not every incident is on there, but it'll give you a feel for what's going on.
In our last... Cucaracha, we have an article too on how we're going to go forward with mandates. In other words, we're still organizers. We still talk to people in the community, and there are thousands of them out there that have had contact with the criminal justice system, the carceral system, and they have their stories. We are gathering those stories. to quantify or give credibility to our issue and the mandates. And by mandates, you know, those are the policies that are, you know, created by the community and civic leaders. We had an article by Dolores Duran, and she wrote about how we're going to look at how we can have more of a voice in those civic public mandates that have that affect people, and where the money goes, how it's spent in this community. And that's just another topic altogether. But if people are interested in learning about these mandates and want to help, then we're happy to meet with them or talk with them.
That's awesome. Yeah, how can people connect with La Cucaracha?
Our website is named lacucarachanews.com. So that'll be the easiest way to find us. We have an email address, lacucaracha@emspueblo.org. You could email us and we'll respond. So there's a couple of ways.
If they want to write, if they
awesome.
Yeah, and if they're interested in helping us with our new online life,
they'll be welcome. I was going to ask why La Cucaracha for the name.
Yes.
Well, it's crazy because you know what? When we were in Boulder, they had the World Affairs event once a year, and the one year that I remember well was the founders of the Rolling Stone newspaper were the guests, and they talked about how they had started Rolling Stone, which became Rolling Stone Magazine.
Yeah.
I don't remember if it was a magazine yet. This was in about 72, 71. But anyway, they talked about how they named the Rolling Stone. They said, well, there was the Rolling Stone, which was a big band. Bob Dylan had written a song called The Rolling Stone, Like a Rolling Stone, and that the Rolling Stone just had this concept of moving on and gathering no moss and all that concept, right? So they said that it was just a natural because all those things. So that I was thinking, well, how do we name our newspaper? And I thought, well, there was a book that many of us had been reading called Revolt of the Cockroach People. Mm-hmm. And it's a court case in California that involved injustice to some Chicanos. They were tried as a group. And anyway, that was a very popular book back in the time. We were studying the Mexican Revolution, and we found out that Pancho Villa was one of the first generals in the world to use a train to transport supplies, medicines, and even have a car for like a hospital to follow his troops.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And he called the train the Cucaracha because it was so slow. It couldn't keep up with the troops. But anyway, and then there's the popular little folk song, La Cucaracha, anyway. Yeah. And I said, that's it. We're the Cucaracha. Right. And then the other thing is, at the time, there were articles about the nuclear holocaust. Mm-hmm. They said that if we suffered a nuclear holocaust, about the only thing that would survive would be the Cucarachas. And we said, well, that's us. We're going to survive.
Yeah, we're going to survive.
So that's where the name comes from.
I like that. That's awesome.
Pueblo Transit is partnering in the community for Zero Fare for Better Air, with events like Pueblo's Care and Share distribution on June 28th, July 26th, and August 23rd at Praise Assembly on Troy Avenue. Pueblo Transit is also providing special shuttles to Pueblo Pride on August 20th at Mineral Palace Park, and offering free service from downtown on Main Street to the Colorado State Fair from August 25th to the 31st. Zero Fare for Better Air is all summer long in June, July, and August. Let's get back in the episode.
Yeah, so let's talk about the Song of Pueblo now. So going from La Cucaracha into the Song of Pueblo.
Yeah, that's a big jump.
A little bit, but I think it comes from the same heart for the town and of those, you know, the connections you mentioned. So, let's talk about it. What's the Song of Pueblo for people who don't know?
All right. The Song of Pueblo is about Pueblo's history.
Mm-hmm.
We cover about 300 years.
Wow.
And move through eras, and our history is so complicated that I thought it would be easier to do it with music than with an exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
Truthfully, they're equally difficult and take a lot of work.
Yeah.
But in working at the museum, I was frustrated because Pueblo is so historic.
Mm-hmm.
Local people don't even know how historic we are.
Yeah.
They have a general sense with the Riverwalk that this is an international border and this is the, a very complex international intrigue here and contacts however, we also have a steel mill.
Yeah.
And thousands of people came here as immigrants to work in the mines, etc. And then that resulted in labor issues. And we have the Ludlow Massacre. And then we had a terrible flood, the 21 flood that, Pueblo was so prosperous that it took out, it gave us a different place in the legislature. Yeah. We lost that power, and that's another story that was told very well in a documentary. I apologize for not recalling the individuals who worked on that, but it was excellent. But you see, the stories are so compelling.
Yeah.
And it happened here. So when we talk about the immigration, we're talking about thousands of stories and how all of these changes is who we are. And for a long time, we just had the image of the steel mill and the railroads, which are incredibly important.
Yeah.
And when we take a look at the indigenous history, then that too, there are so many stories about each and every tribe, and there's the story about what happened here at the El Pueblo Trading Post when, you know, the border had changed. The Indian agents weren't, you know, doing their jobs well to protect people. There was no real support for that. There was an uprising, and when they weren't even represented when one of their braves was killed by a Mexican man, they sought justice by speaking to the territorial governor Meriwether, right? Nothing happened. They were given gifts. Smallpox broke out from that interaction, and so they attacked the trading post.
Wow.
So that story alone is worth telling. The Mormon battalion moved through here when the trading post existed. So the first American women to come west came here because their husbands were enlisted in the Mexican-American War. That was going on during the time of the El Pueblo Trading Post. So you see how compelling that is to find out more, you know, and none of this is taught in our local school, or let alone the school district, let alone the state school. Colorado history focused on, you know, the earliest native people, you know, the pre-Columbian history, and then they move very quickly in a little bit about the conquistadores, and then they move into the industry, railroading, steel making, gold discovery, which is also very interesting, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. But
it's not the whole picture.
Not the whole picture. And when exhibits are fascinating and they are wonderful, that's what drew me to being a museum professional.
Yeah.
But my frustration was is that there's too much history. How do we impart this history? And I learned about the oratorio by seeing one. The oratorio is the genre that we're that this. Song of Pueblo is.
Yeah.
And it was being an oratorio called the West Side Oratorio was being performed in Denver by Su Teatro, Chicano Theater Company. So, we went to see it. It was the story of how people were displaced when gentrification came along. But this neighborhood was displaced for, you know, the Auroria campus. all right, so having seen this performance and the music, that's what moved me.
Yeah, I want to interject that the artist that produced the West Side Oratorio, who wrote the songs and performed in the Oratorio, West Side Oratorio, is Daniel Valdez. Daniel Valdez and his brother Luis Valdez were early filmmakers in about 1980. They produced a movie called Zoot Suit. And it's kind of like a cult movie now, if you can find it. We have a copy. But it started out as a little theater a theater in L.A. It ran for 7 years. It was sold out every performance for 7 years. It was so popular in L.A., they took it to Broadway. And in Broadway, they ran for a month and got panned by the local media, and it was quashed, and we thought it was over. But then they decided, they got the funding to make a movie of it, and like I say, the movie was very popular at the time, but it's all like about the 1980s.
Yeah.
But in the process, because we had the Cucaracha newspaper, we met Daniel Valdez.
Oh, that's cool.
And when we saw that he was the artist that did the Oratorio in Denver, we recruited him to do the Oratorio here in Pueblo. But,
wow.
But you know, people don't know the name Daniel Valdez, but they know the word La Bamba, or the movie La Bamba.
Yeah.
He was the one that found the Valenzuela family and got the story about Richie Valens, and turned it into the movie. He was the associate producer of that movie. So he was already kind of like riding a high tide when he did the Oratorio, and to get him in Pueblo was a coup.
Wow.
I mean, he spent probably close to 6 months over a little more than a year period doing research, meeting people, interviewing local people. So Pueblo's lucky to have such a gifted artist to tell our story, and that's what that's the essence of the Song of Pueblo, are these beautiful lyrics about these key events in our history.
Wow. How long was the process to gather all the information and put it together?
I introduced the idea to a few people in January in 2008, and I thought it was going to be a difficult sell.
Yeah.
It flew. I mean, people got behind it immediately. I did the vetting process. I was an employee of History Colorado, and I was able to move forward and commission Daniel. And we worked with the individuals from the different libraries and other museums, because we were gathering a lot of the information, and but we also needed a coalition of supporters, etc. You know, so that worked out very well. Came together rapidly, and then I wrote a grant, and at the time. We were also working with the Art Center. They had a grant, and those two grants, we were able to pay Daniel Valdez to come to Pueblo, and he fell in love with it. He had been here before. We had actually met him when he performed at the State Fair.
Do you remember the Linda Ronstadt tour of Canciones de mi Padre, Stories of Her Father? It was a national tour. They toured for most of a year. He's the male vocalist in that concert with Linda Ronstadt when she still had a voice.
That's cool.
She had.
But he actually toured Europe when he was 17 years old. He was already moving with other like-minded people, young actors, performers, musicians that were literally associated with the Teatro Campesino. That's the farm worker theater that was started out of the lettuce boycott and the
grapes.
Farm worker strikes, the grape boycotts. And their theater was what we call guerrilla theater or street theater. And they would go out to the people, whether it was downtown Denver or Chicago, or farming communities in various states. They sent out people, throughout the country to organize, and that was the work of Cesar Chavez at that time.
Yeah.
So that has that wonderful history, and that's where they had their start. They are the founders of Teatro Campesino. And Helen Mirren, for example, was one of the young actors that
came out of that.
That's
way
too,
cool.
Isn't it?
Yeah, so it's has it been running since 2008? Or?
Oh, it's still in existence. Absolutely. They just celebrated their 50th anniversary, I think, a year ago.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh.
Oh, that's it's older than that.
And they
that,
have a school.
Su Teatro just celebrated their 50-year anniversary. Oh. That's the Denver group. Mm. But Campesino, Teatro Campesino is about at least 10 years older.
Wow.
They have a charter school. Mm. And the interesting thing, I think, is that they're in San Juan Bautista, California, and one the opening story of our oratorio is San Juan Bautista here in Pueblo. Mm. That what's his last name?
Juan Bautista de Anza.
De Anza.
Wow.
De Anza is the man that went to California, and that's, you know, when the missions began, and you know, people learned about, you know, the coastal, you know, indigenous peoples there, and so that the Spanish settled there as well. But Juan Bautista de Anza was a general, a great strategist, and he went up against the Comanches as a general, and he defeated them. And that's the story. That's one song right there. So that's why we want people to come and see the show and see it again and again, because people see more,
pick up more
as they enjoy the music and the musicians. Oh my God, they're just incredible. We have Wayne Wilkinson on guitar. We have Carlos Krull, well-known local artist, right? And Mireia Arena, who is our music director, who does the vocalization, the harmonies, and she really does a great job directing these musicians. Then we have our local Puebloan, another local Puebloan, Felicia Gallegos Perez. She has a remarkable voice. She's also an actor. She has worked with Daniel Valdez on many projects, and she worked and is still associated with Su Teatro in Denver. She's done many productions with them.
Wow, that's quite the team.
And then we have Avalon Wiggins. He is marvelous. A lot of people know him, but he's a transplant to Pueblo. He loves it here. He and his wife, Julie, they have been here a few years, but he was touring as a contract percussionist when he was 15.
Wow.
Yes. And so he's our percussionist. We're very proud of him. And then Michael Beck has a long history in Pueblo as the as a professor and at the university, Colorado State University Pueblo, for a number of years. And we're happy to work with him. He's also a noted musician locally. And we're very fortunate to have this talent, but we started with talent. Our first band, we had people like Tom Munch, David Enke, Linda Ammon, who has since passed, Johnny Watson, who's an incredible group of people. So we've always been able to work with the best.
Good. That's awesome. So when's the event? How can people buy tickets and go?
Well, it's we have a show.
Yeah,
we have a show tomorrow night. And people can go online to buy their tickets.
Yep.
They can go to the box office that night. They can buy tickets at the door. And they can call and use their debit card to purchase tickets.
Tomorrow night is August 18th, by the way.
Great. And then where's the event at?
It's at the Sangre de Cristo Arts and Conference Center.
Perfect.
In the Jackson Conference Center.
In the theater.
Perfect. And what time does it start?
It will get underway at 7 p.m. And
perfect.
Before that, we're pleased to have the Ray Paycheck Drummers are going to be out on the paseo. They their exhibit of drums, Ray is a drum maker, is going to be on exhibit opening the very next day. Wow. So people can come and watch and listen to them as a preload, excuse me, a preload. A prelude.
Yep, you're all over it. Yeah.
To the presentation.
That's awesome. Great. And so, so let's say somebody's listening to this podcast, you know, after our event date, August 18th, but they still love what you guys are doing and want to stay connected. Where can they find out where next events are? Is there one going on next year? What does that all look like?
Yes. We have one coming up in October, another performance that will be promoted. We're working with the Colorado University's American Institute of Music.
Yeah.
They have hired us to perform the oratorio with Colorado University's orchestra.
Wow.
Yes, so that will be exciting for us, and it will be a free admission show for the community, October 21st. It's a Saturday, 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Great, and then is that at the Arts Center as well, or is that one at?
No, that will be at Memorial Hall.
Perfect.
And so there'll be more information as the time draws near.
Great.
And then we have been doing concerts for all the third graders in District 60. So we'll be doing that at the Art Center.
That's
October
cool.
4th. That's just FYI for the information. They need to know that we do that.
Yeah.
And then the same show that we will do with the orchestra at Memorial Hall will be also performed in Boulder on campus in the Grissom Hall. And so both of those are free to the public.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. And that's a lot.
Yes, it is. It's a lot. Yes.
Between the Cucaracha and the
right.
changes on that.
That's a lot of performances, travel, and coordination, et cetera. So that's why I'm the producer. That's my job. I'm not a musician. Not at all. But they help us tell the stories of Pueblo.
The other thing that helps us tell the story of Pueblo is we have hundreds of pictures, historic pictures. We have a few reenactments. We have current photography of Pueblo the way it is today. So all of these images are projected behind the band and the orchestra that will that tell the story in a different way, visually reinforce the lyrics that are being sung. So it's very educational.
So between all of that, so between La Cucaracha, between the Song of Pueblo and everything else you guys do, what keeps you going? What makes it worth it?
She's a good cook.
Well, I am. But really, it's our passions. I've explained my career and the discovery of the oratorio. That's what keeps us going. But realistically, we need to retire again. And so we're looking at pulling back a little bit. We're looking at some options for Song of Pueblo.
Yeah.
It is owned by History Colorado. Yeah. It is their property because I produced it as an employee.
Yeah, yeah. Makes sense.
And so we're just going to be exploring some opportunities as we go forward that that we can hopefully hand it off and keep it, but still to an entity that can keep it going.
And cares about it.
Yes, 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 yes.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm really proud of you guys for all of that effort. And it's really cool to me to see, you know, just how passionate you guys are for this place and have made it home. And it's inspiring.
We are proud of it. And one of the things that I want to mention about Song of Pueblo is that we want to educate entertain and inspire people. So knowing their history, we want students to grow up with the Song of Puebla and be inspired to be performers. We want more appreciation always for the performing arts. And we think we have a lot of talent in Pueblo.
Absolutely.
We do.
We have an untapped audience outside of Pueblo. You know, Pueblo doesn't have a good image or a good reputation statewide, or even broader than that. And if they knew the true history of Pueblo, we would have much more respect. And the one thing that I've seen from our audiences, they come out all pumped up with pride in their community. And that's really the bottom line, is I have never regretted coming to Pueblo and spending my career here. And this is a celebration and a gift to this community. And hopefully it will continue when we're no longer able to continue it.
It's always been my dream as a museum educator to take Song of Pueblo to universities and other schools. Yeah. And it's also been my dream that the oratorio be studied in relationship to Daniel Valdez. He's written three oratorios. I've mentioned West Side Oratorio. Now we have the Song of Pueblo, and he did one at where he lives, just outside of Hollister, California, is
San Juan Bautista.
San Juan Bautista, and so he's written one there. So we have a song about Juan Bautista de Anza, but there they have the whole oratorio is about Bautista.
Wow.
And I just heard recently that there's going to be, there is a ANZA association, and their conference is going to be in Alamosa this year. So I'm going to give them that plug.
Yeah. Give them that plug. Hey, that's awesome. Great. Well, Deborah and Juan, thank you guys so much for coming in and sharing your passion for Pueblo. We really appreciate it. And one more time, how can people connect with La Cucaracha?
LaCucarachaNews.com is our website. It's under construction at the moment. We'll have it up and running by October at the latest.
Perfect.
And I guess, our email is lacucaracha@emspueblo.org.
Perfect. And then, one more time, the events we've got the Song of Pueblo coming tomorrow night, so it's 7 o'clock at Sangre de Cristo Arts Center, and that tomorrow night is August 18th, for those of you who are listening. And then the next event is October 21st at 1 o'clock at Memorial Hall.
Right.
Correct. Awesome. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, Ben.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I had a great time. Awesome. Well, yes, for Ben and Deborah and Juan, thank you so much for listening. Go check out the Pueblo Star Journal if you're listening to this as well. Connect with us. You can see all of our articles and check out our other podcasts. Our last podcast was with Jimmy Dunn, who was a climber in town, and it was a lot of fun. So it was a lot of fun and a great podcast. So go check that out if you're listening. Thank you so much for Ben, Juan, and Deb. Have a great rest of your day.
Zero Fare for Better Air is happening with Pueblo Transit all summer long in June, July, and August. Ride Pueblo Transit or City Lift free throughout the hot summer months. Leave the car at home, enjoy one of 12 routes offered throughout the city, and help save carbon emissions during the hottest time of the year. Need help finding a route? Call Pueblo Transit at 719-553-2723 or visit the website at www.pueblo.us. This podcast is brought to you by the City of Pueblo.